This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR.
Listening to live and on-demand shows has never been easier on MPR. All you have to do is go to the App Store or Play Store on your device and search up Access Internet Radio NZ. Select and download the first option at the top of the list. Once you've downloaded the app, the next step is to open the app and look for MPR. Once found, select it and then browse freely. Supported by New Zealand On Air.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future.
Today I have with me Andy Asquith.
Okay, and I'm Stuart Perks. Now, Andy, your area of expertise in particular is the local government political science, and you've been writing on issues of voting systems.
That's right, Stuart. Within New Zealand at the moment, there is a move by a small number of local authorities to move, in part at least, to a form of online or e-voting for the local body elections in 2019.
E-voting for electronic voting, so it's people voting through the internet, through their computers.
Yeah, essentially, it's people using the internet, voting online, e-voting. These terms seem to get mixed up and used interchangeably. Historically, there was a move by a small number of local authorities in 2016 to move to this model. I discovered last week information from a colleague that who obtained some minutes under the Freedom of Information Act, that the attempt to go to use e-voting in 2016 collapsed because the minister felt that the local authorities weren't geared up enough for it. And interestingly, the local authorities felt that the government wasn't supportive of them. So it looks as though that the book was passed around in 2016, and one would hope that would be the same in 2019 as well.
So what about central government? Do they have e-voting?
Central government don't have e-voting. I suppose if you go to the ultimate outcome here, then the idea is that eventually we would be conduct all elections electronically.
Okay. Now, the Americans have something like that, but it's in person. They go to a voting booth. Is that right?
In some states, they do.
Such as Florida, where they keep having recounts. Would that be right?
Florida, and I suspect somewhere else. In the literature, e-voting is written about in a number of overseas countries. Canada, Switzerland, Lithuania, I think, is the poster child for this. And also, of course, in New South Wales in Australia, where it's used, I think, in the state elections.
Okay. Now, we've been through a process, and for most of my voting life, it's all been in person. You go to the polling centre, and you have your name registered, and you go to the curtain booth, and you vote. We've had, I think, a short time of postal voting, where the voting forms are sent out to you, fill them in, and you post them back. Do you know how long we've been having that system?
It seems about the last 20 years or so. I could dig down, and I ought to know this off the top of my head, but it's probably about the last 6 or 7 local body elections that have been done by postal voting.
Okay, so there's a process. We've gone from in person, and even historically in person, it was is it all public? Is it sort of confidential? And then we've gone to postal for a short time, and now there's this move over to e-voting. And there are strengths and weaknesses of all of those, so there's reasons why they want to progress through.
I suppose the overriding reason for moving from voting in person to postal voting, and then from postal voting to e-voting, is about ease of voting.
Yeah.
It's about making it more accessible for people. the problem is that neither postal voting nor electronic voting actually tackle some of the core issues. And of course, the overriding thing here is you move to postal voting and then e-voting is to try to increase the turnout.
Yeah.
Because under the old system of voting in person, turnout was falling.
Yeah.
So we moved to postal voting. There's a short blip of an increase, and then it tailed off again. Okay. And
now, one of the big problems, though, in the should I call them the new democracies, countries that are moving into voting systems, is that there's a big question mark, and those are in-person voting. There's big questions as to are they corrupted? Is it working properly? The scope for electoral fraud or rigging the system seems to be quite high. So, are these other systems more secure or less secure?
I think my view would be that the system of voting in person is probably the most secure. And if you think back to the mid-90s when you had the first free election in South Africa, and I clearly remember watching pictures on the TV of people literally walking for days and queuing for hours and hours so they could cast a vote for the first time. Because this was something that was life-changing, it was fundamental. That is something that we seem to have forgotten. By making things easy, we take certain aspects of the electoral process out of the equation.
So, but on the other hand, you're increasing the number of... You think you get more votes if it's easier than harder, or are you saying you get more when it's actually difficult to go in person?
There is no evidence that making it easier increases turnout. Certainly, if you look at the numbers in New Zealand, it's not.
Yeah.
something that we'll pick up on later, I suspect, but I'll mention it now, is all the evidence that I've seen is that the one group that is positively engaged with online voting are people from our generation. So we're talking
people...
We're
the really old people, is that a mix?
Well, speak for yourself, Stuart. It's sort of 45 to 65.
Yeah.
But we're a generation that are going to vote anyway, whether it's e-voting, portal voting, or in-person voting.
Yeah. It's not just... what percentage of the electorate vote, it's also the different groups. Do you get suitable representation from each of the different groups? And you've got different behaviours with...
Well, there's usually different behaviours. There is considerable evidence from New Zealand, from a number of sources now, for instance, that demonstrate that if a young person doesn't vote in either of the first two elections that they're eligible for after their 18th birthday, so that would typically be a local body election and a general election, if they don't vote in either of those two elections, then they'll never vote.
Yeah.
So we have a whole, well, it's not a generation now, it's intergenerational patterns of people simply being disengaged.
Well, I'd have to say, I find in Palmerston North, we had the ward system. So then you're choosing who to vote for out of a list of sort of 6 to 8 people when you're electing a couple. And there's a chance that you might know something about most of those. But when you get for the whole electorate, big long list, and say, OK, vote for some of them, you look and you think, well, I know a couple of those. Most of those I've probably never heard of. Am I going to spend time to try and get to know 30 different candidates, or just read the one paragraph they've each provided?
But that
makes it very difficult.
That's part of the issue. Candidates here have 150 words to sell themselves.
Yeah.
And if you take what the candidates say, then all candidates will tell you that they love their wife and grandkids, they work in the community, and they're kind to animals. That's a generic set of statements, and 99.9% of candidates will typically use some variation of that.
Yeah.
It says nothing about what their values are, what their beliefs are, what their affiliations are or persuasions are. Excuse me. And to add to that, what you have is candidates standing as independent, in inverted commas. So we had the bizarre situation of the by-election for the regional council recently, where the candidate who won had his election material printed in green,
mm-hmm.
and his last job had been as a National Party Member of Parliament, which is...
Well, it's one of the points that's sometimes raised is name recognition is the thing that gets votes. If people have heard of you before.
Well, there are three typical reasons why people will be elected to local bodies in New Zealand. The first one is if you have name recognition.
Mm-hmm.
So I've heard it said a number of times now by academics and people in local government, partly in jest, but with an experiment that would be interesting to conduct. That quite simply, if in 2019 Richie McCaw announced his candidacy for the mayoralty of Christchurch, it would win. Mm. As simple as that.
Yeah.
So the first reason we've got to
this... Richie McCaw, because as
his name recognition...
Well-known, it's all black, is that makes him good as a politician. Yeah.
You know, I couldn't comment on that. Yeah. But, you know, we have people that have been on the telly reading the weather who shouldn't become councillors. So the second way people get elected is if they're incumbent.
Yeah, they're there already, so
they're already there. People sort of know them, and they're in the system. And then the third way is what we would call sort of retreads. People who've been in national politics and have decided that their sort of retirement sinecure is local body stuff.
Yeah.
In looking around the country, there are a number of mayors that have. You know, I've had careers, sometimes stellar careers in national politics.
Hmm. And like Auckland.
Well, Phil Goff's a prime example, but the mayor of Rotorua.
Yes.
And there are a small number of other mayors around and local body politicians that have done just that.
Well there's a term that I've heard just being referred to recently, which hasn't come across before, the idea of career politicians, people who decide they're going to spend their whole life in politics, whereas in the past it was far more you go, you do your bit in business or academia or whatever, and then you have a spell in politics and maybe you step back. But now we've got people who are treating it as a lifetime career. Is that something new?
I wouldn't say it's something new. What is, I suppose, wearing my UK hat, what's unusual for me is within the UK what you tend to have is people using local government as a training ground.
So we have had that here. Steve Mahari, for example, started off in local government here, moved into central government.
Well, I would argue that Steve... it's different here in the sense that people who are in local politics are so-called independents, and there are a few people in local government here that have made the transition from local to national and been successful. You know, Steve Mahari's...
It was a training.
And I suppose to a certain extent, another example would be our current MP for Palmerston, who was on Palmerston Council and then went into Parliament.
Yeah, Ian Lees-Galloway.
Yeah. But you look at the experience of John O'Neiller. Tried to do that and realised that he just was...
He went to Parliament, but didn't last,
And one wonders why. It'd be interesting to see... Yeah. What Lawrence Yule does in Parliament, because Lawrence Yule had a stellar career in local government. He was a mayor of Hastings, he was president of local government New Zealand.
Yeah.
He's now a first term member of Parliament for the National Party. Mm. Be interesting to see how he does and how he fares.
Yeah, okay.
But the local. The Parliament here is not littered with. People that have had stellar careers in local government and use it as a stepping stone.
Yeah.
You know, apart from the few exceptions, then.
Okay. Now, to get back to the voting systems, then, you have reservations about e-voting. Would that be correct?
I think reservations is probably too mild a way to put it, to be honest, Stuart.
Okay. Well, given that maybe in 20 years' time this is what we're going to see everywhere, why at this stage are you concerned about it?
Because we're ignoring the fundamentals as to why people don't vote. We can. It doesn't matter what methods we give people to vote, but if they're disengaged, if they don't understand why they're voting, what they're voting for, then it's pointless. The fundamental fact is people do not understand the role, scope and scale and importance of local government in their daily lives.
Okay, to be cynical, or play devil's advocate, young people now, they're used to being on thing of Facebook, Trade Me and so on. So much of that is voting up and I like this, don't like that, and so-and-so's a good trader, so-and-so's bad. They're so used to expressing their opinions through the internet at the press of a button. Even some of the dating apps and so on, you swipe left or right, do you like someone or not? So isn't it ingrained in them to express their preferences electronically?
That could well be the case, but I think when we're talking about politics and life and things where things aren't black and white, if someone either likes or dislikes, then it's a simple yes or no.
But that's a vote.
But surely the idea of democracy is the idea that we debate issues, we think about them, we talk about them.
And then you vote.
And then we come. But what we're doing is we're cutting that important aspect is being completely removed. It's straight to the end game.
Was it there before? I remember 40 years ago, 50 years ago, in the university political economy course, politic political science courses, why did people vote? And a lot of it, this in the UK, our family's always been conservative, so I vote conservative, or our family's always been Labour, so I vote Labour, or I like the suit he wears, I'll vote for him, and that was it. A lot of it was just gut feeling or carry on a tradition.
I fully appreciate that my views on this may not be in the mainstream. I still believe in Father Christmas, but I do hold very dear to my heart the idea that we will discuss and debate. You know, we're sat here now within a university, which is all about ideas and the exchange of ideas. And pushing ideas.
Well,
and pushing
I could
ideas.
Mention Don Brash. I mean, I know people in the future won't know about Don Brash.
Don
not, being, not being allowed to come and speak here.
But he's been.
Yeah, he has been since then, yeah.
He's been.
Yeah. Okay, so you say you've got to know what about the situation before you vote. And is there a difference between in-person, postal and e-voting in terms of the amount of information people gather before voting?
Too many young people, unfortunately, will get their information, their news from Twitter, which is 140 characters, or perhaps 280 characters now. That simplifies ideas.
Well, I've been to talks here where, is it the Science Media Centre or something? There's this body to try and get more science out in the news media. And they're telling academics how to interact with the news media to get the story out. And I was sat there and heard the head of that unit saying to scientists, you have to be able to come out with sound bites. News media want the sound bites, the short, snappy comment, and that's it, because all there's time for. And when they said, well, our issues are more complex than that, too bad. If you can't do the sound bites, you won't get reported.
The soundbite thing is a problem, even for, dare I say this, there's only one place in New Zealand to get serious quality reporting on national level, that's Radio New Zealand National. And even there, I found some of my statements
So you're talking on personal experience, you being interviewed and reported, yeah. I found the same. Yeah.
And it's not good.
I think it's changing as well. There's all the talk now about news media and the changing funding model. You don't get the investigative reporting, you don't get the highly informed specialist analysts sort of interviewing and so on.
About 12 years ago, Stuart, I was at a political science conference at Canterbury. And Canterbury has got a very good school of journalism, which has got to do with the politics department down there. Yeah. And they had a closed-door session when they brought in a couple of external people. One of these people they brought in was John Campbell. And I'd seen John Campbell on Campbell Live a couple of times and thought that he was really flaky.
Flaky
as in lightweight, no substance. And I was really disappointed because I... the nice people that listen to it, if anyone ever listens to it, I was brought up listening to a TV interviewer called Jeremy Paxman in the UK and a radio people called Brian Redhead who would get all the politicians and only let go when they pleaded for mercy.
Well, Robin Day and
Robin Day is another example.
Dimbleby, was very strong. Parkinson was more on the friendly side, but high quality. David Frost was noted for his interview with Nixon, wasn't it?
Within New Zealand, that sort of interviewing is certainly on TV is almost non-existent. So Campbell comes along and he makes it clear at the outset that this session is conducted under what we call Chatham House rules, i.e. what's said in the room stays in the room, which is why I'm telling you now, but it's 12 years on, so we're alright. And Campbell, someone questioned him about this and he said, look, I'll be quite clear with this. Everyone that works on the programme thinks the same. The problem is that it's driven by ratings.
Yes.
And all the evidence shows that as soon as we start doing too many of the stories that we want to do, then people just change channels and the advertisers start getting ratty.
This is your point as well about people voting, they're not being well informed and they don't necessarily want to be. But this is, I mean, from an economics background, which is where I'm coming from, there's the issue of the costs and benefits. How much effort should you invest in getting informed on issues that are going to have either marginal impact on you or you're going to have marginal impact on them?
But because we haven't actually tried to do it or costed it, then the general conclusion is, why bother? So one of the things that I would like to do is, I suppose there are two primary things. The first one is, teaching of civics in schools, which is an absolute must. You know, we live in a democracy. The Economist Intelligence Unit produces a report every year, like a global democracy index, and they rank 180 odd countries in terms of their level of democracy. The highest ranking being a full democracy. And out of the 180-odd countries, in the last 2 years, only 19, that's 1-9 countries, have been ranked as full democracies. Where people have freedom of speech, the rule of law, they have an independent judiciary, and free elections that aren't interfered with.
So does that rule out America now, given all this talk about Russia again?
Neither the US nor the UK are ranked in those 19. We are...
New Zealanders.
So we are in a very small minority of nations that enjoy these privileges. And yet, most people, certainly local body elections, couldn't give a stuff. And that's that's a travesty. Especially when you think about, I mentioned about South Africa earlier on, people walking for days and queuing for hours. Really important. We saw it in the States last week.
Now they did. Would they feel the same now in South Africa, given their experience of democracy?
Well, is it the experience of democracy or the experience of the people that could be involved?
But this is the result of democracy. That is the reality of democracy.
It doesn't have to be. It doesn't have to. I've seen evidence in the UK in local elections where local authorities have done really positive stuff in the community.
Yeah.
And they've gone out there and they've educated and they've taught. One of the issues that, you know, that we need to have here is, and it was first highlighted to me in a book published 10 years ago now by a colleague called Jean Drage, called The Balancing Act. And she says, called The Balancing Act. And she says that councils have got two roles. On the one hand, they have the governance role. On the other hand, they have the representative role. And what happens is people get elected to council and they just get sucked into the governance role. They get bombarded with paper.
So, for a novice, what's the difference between these two?
Well, the governance role is making sure that things are done legally and appropriately, and setting the strategy of the organisation. But the representative role is being our voice in council.
Yeah, okay. And so they're representing the electorate.
They're representing the electorate.
Okay.
And I mean, what happens is that people go to the council, they get bombarded with paper, with a governance role,
yeah,
and the representative role is just pushed on one side.
Yeah. Okay.
What we need to do is need to get councillors out.
Is that partly removing the ward system is going to...
I think it's, you see, because the other thing that we have in Palmerston, the other thing that's in the mix here, is councils have the option of either using first past the post, yes, or STV as their electoral system.
Single transferable.
And the evidence shows that councils that use first past the post have a tendency to be, well, this is generalisation, but there's evidence that supports this, they tend to be male, mm-hmm, they tend to be pale, and they tend to be stale. So it's male, white, old.
Now, if experienced. Some cultures would say people are more experienced are likely to be...
I wouldn't go as far as making that sweeping statement, Stuart, based on my experience.
Well, your experience allows you to judge people's judgment on the basis of their experience.
My experience of local government and not observing it.
Councils
that use STV tend to elect
more
diverse councils.
Yes.
Which better reflect a diverse society. Yeah. In Palmerston,
going for your majority group, basically, more commonly. Now, we're very nearly at time. Is there any way you could just, summary, just bullet points, pros and cons of voting in person, postal voting, e-voting, strengths and weaknesses of each type?
Well, I struggle to think of any strengths of postal voting, other than the fact that, in theory, we still all have a postal service. The problem is the postal service is on its knees, and there's a real question as to whether or not the postal service will be able to facilitate a local body election in 2022.
Okay.
So
postal would fail, so it's either go back to the in-person or go forward to e-voting.
I think that's it. And one of my big problems is people have decided that they'll go forwards and won't look at the past.
Yeah.
And and going forwards is fraught with issues. And
is it generational? You know, it's the transition that's the problem, and in 20 years everyone will be used to the whole electronic.
Well, I don't think everyone will be, because one of the things that's talked about is digital poverty.
Yeah, which means
quite simply that not everyone has got the latest smartphone or the or the latest tablet or computer.
But
now, to get round that, it's been suggested, people could vote in libraries.
Yes.
But still, why would people vote in a library if they don't know what they're voting for?
If they used to go to the library to use the electronic resources, which is happening increasingly, then maybe it is a good solution.
If you look at the poorer parts of Palmerston, what's the library uptake in those parts of Palmerston?
There's an interesting issue with libraries at the moment. That's moving to a separate topic. But the idea of moving from the old style, everyone has to be very quiet, you go there for the specialist information and so on, to be the living room of the city and the small suburban libraries and the mobile bus library. This is accessibility and getting people who wouldn't normally use the library to be going in there and using those facilities. So it's working very hard towards that, actually.
I'd be interested.
Again, it's transitional, perhaps. But
every time I've been near a library, I have to say that the traditional people that have been in there, they could have been councillors. They've been male, pale, and stale.
You've used that term a few times now. That's politically quite common now. But actually, you get a lot of children using the library. You get migrant groups using the library, and so on.
And that's a trend that I would encourage and would like to see. But we need to get councillors out there, and councillors need to go into schools and talk about these issues.
Yeah.
And it needs to be a regular thing. It can't just be a one-off. Before the local body elections next year, the TV executive of Local Government New Zealand will have a piece published probably in the Herald and the Don Post, say how important local government is.
Yep.
And the next thing we'll hear from him will be 3 years' time when he'll publish the same piece. It's got to be an ongoing thing. If people don't understand the relevance... But just this morning, your journey here has brought you into multiple interactions with Palmerston North Council. Mm. Multiple. And yet most people wouldn't know a sausage about it.
Yeah.
Which is really, really scary. And councils have got an obligation to educate people.
Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programmes can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website, and a range of programmes is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz.
Support this programme and others like it by giving a donation to MPR. More details at mpr.nz.